start off with our first question. I searched online and I realized that your Chinese name is it's like Zhe Lim. So it sounds very interesting to me, and it seems very meaningful, like gathering and also integrity. So I was wondering, like, how does name come from? What were your parents' like expectations, and did it carry like a significance throughout your life?
Yeah, well, it's a name given by my to me by my parents, and I actually never thought much of it until later on in my life, when I was younger. But I thought it was great. It gives me some aspiration, and I have look at it and take a look at the different interpretation and how it has. It can be manifested in life. It could be for myself. I can develop to be more a straight and more morally driven person, or it could be I can be a person that helped together around me a lot of other associates who are morally upright. Okay. And so I think that's good aspiration for me to both act as a person and to grow into at that time, and also for me to conduct how I could conduct myself among my in my daily life and associate with those that that can exhibit those characteristics.
Yeah, that sounds really great. Yeah, I was just also wondering about like why did you choose to study linguistics when you came to the US, or when you were choosing your major and you like gradually gone through like undergrad all the way to PhD?
Yeah, well, linguistics for many different reasons, but at the very beginning, it intrigued me as a study an area with a fairly formal way of approaching social science, and it provides the rigor and a research methodology that was very useful for me, I thought. It presents itself with academic and scientific methodologies that is strong among the social sciences, or maybe stronger than other social sciences. So, in the deeper sense that when we look at science, we look at formal knowledge is something that we want to be able to understand, but not just to understand, but to be able to go on in ultimately as in pure sciences into predicting what can happen based on what happened in the past. We call it a predictive modeling. And so many of the social sciences are approaching that. Most commonly you see is because of how it drives our lives these days, it's in finance and economics. So we try to build models, but linguistics is one of those early on that has really get into the field, and with a strong background of scientific research and methodology and trying to do that, and that intrigued me. And of course, language itself is something very interesting. Our thoughts are based on that, our development is based on that, and it influences us. And also we influence language, and it's reflected in the different things that we do socially. So many aspect of it interests me. So I'm still I still read some of the books in linguistics to keep myself engaged in that area. Not doing formal research anymore, but just to gain a better, deeper understanding of our youth and the reflection of what's happening in the society.
Yeah, that sounds great. Like among those books, would you have any like recommendations for us or like for laymen in general to gain more
I
understanding?
just I actually just returned from Hong Kong a couple of days ago.
Oh, you went there to travel, right?
I picked up the book and published by Chinese University in Hong Kong, from about it's not a new book, but but it's a book that's still relevant on Cantonese and its political implications. And this collection of essays, it's very interesting. I've started reading it, and it talks about many areas of Cantonese and its position, its history, and the use of Cantonese. And as we know, the use of language is ultimately the most important part of language. It's everything about language, this meaning, its implication, its social, economic reflections, all of those in the way we use language. So, and Cantonese as a language, well, one of the languages, but the main language used in Hong Kong, has gone through many changes, and it's still going through changes. And it's interesting to reflect on what's happening now, and to actually look back on what had happened before.
Yeah, that sounds great. And also, like, because you've been in the US for so long, and it's definitely like great to revisit back in Cantonese. And I did see one of your interviews in Taiwan, which was in Mandarin. So you have like a very diverse like ability in languages, which is so good.
Well, I was able to pick up some Mandarin. Actually, I went to when I was in at Berkeley. I took formal courses in Mandarin. I learned romanization, the pinyin system. That helped tremendously. That helped, but for me as a linguist, that I also learned those fairly easily. But it helped with the pronunciation, and it addresses one of the more common and funny issues that how Cantonese speak Mandarin, and we could all never pronounce them, pronounce the words correctly, and we always carry a heavy accent when we pronounce Mandarin.
But that's great that you're like doing this for lifelong learning, and it's so cool to me. I was also wondering, like, what was your experience like as an international students in the US, like in the past century? And what are the key differences or the opportunities that you observe are different between then versus now, like in the 21st century?
I came to the US in I think 1970, so that's a very long time ago. And so the system that is developed to assist students from another country, international students, to transition into the university, into the academic work, and into the society, all these areas were mostly non-existing. So we learned on our own, and we found our way into dealing with things, and mostly through help with those who came before us. And so I was lucky to have people who helped in that regard. So in some ways, that was good because it forced us to come into direct contact with a mainstream society, and we learned. And it's important that we learn and being in close contact with the mainstream society to see and to really understand the differences, and then adopt the appropriate behaviors to deal with the new situation, the new language environment what we are in. We cannot rely on a large community of friends or fellow students from Hong Kong who we socialize with. So that's mainly the difference.
Wow, that is so nice. And also, there must be like much more challenges that you faced like back then versus now, because it's like much more established. There are like a much bigger population of international students compared
Oh,
to.
yes. I mean, we, American society has progressed a great deal, okay, in the last, during the last 50 something years that I've been here, right? And a lot for the better. And there are some areas that have regressed, but mostly it has progressed into a society that's much more receptive, much more open, and much more tolerating, more tolerant of people who are different, and into the extent that it's even more accepting of diverse thoughts,
Right.
behavior, and people with different looks. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
That's in our constitution. Our constitution dictates that, this country is made up of mostly immigrants, and they can be coming from all parts of the world. There's no limit.
Right.
Yeah. So as the country is progressing, we're practicing more and more of that. That is actually set out as ideal for this country. So, this is progress, and I'm glad to see that for students like you and youngsters like you, there is a much better supportive system. There's a more welcoming community and more welcoming society, to many of
Yeah.
you.
Yeah, it must have taken a lot of courage for you to go on this path, like to study and then to like have this whole career here. And I know that you have studied in like community college for 2 years before like transferring to UC Berkeley. And I wonder if that experience actually inspired you to also take on leadership positions at, you know, like Santa Monica College and devote like your career to being president at these community colleges.
Oh yes, I think it has a profound impact on me on very many different levels. Okay. But first of all, when I left Hong Kong, I was not responsive to the way the education and the way education was being conducted at that time. It did not interest me, it did not engage me, it did not stimulate me to learn more. I felt I was wasting my time, and I was going through routines that were not meaningful to me. I didn't know what knowledge was for or how interesting that was. Okay. So I was not a outstanding student based on the metrics through which we were measured in those days. Okay, my exams were terrible because I was not good at taking exams. And basically, I was not even interested in taking exams. And the lessons were not conducted in the ways that inspired me to learn, provide me with reasons why I should learn the contents. Nor were the faculty members, I think, encouraged to spend time in enlightening the students because of the heavy load that they have, with the heavy syllabus that they have. So most were teaching to the test and the examinations, right? Of course, there are exemptions, but that's most of my experience. But after I got here, the easy way for me to get into a university, a higher education, was to go to a community college, and I did, and yes, and it turned the lights on for me, of knowledge. Okay, it introduced me to a world of learning that's fun, that's engaging, that's fulfilling. And so from there, and the way it was, and the way learning, not just teaching, learning was emphasized, through different modes of instruction and activities, and or inside the classroom, outside of the classroom, as we talked about earlier, was useful for me. It was easy for me to absorb the information, and it was also easy for me to understand the value of what I'm learning. So I became very interested in education. So from there, I went on to Berkeley, and then I went into to Stanford. And then one of the things I think most important is that education has to be something, it's enjoyable, and it stimulates your intellectual development. And also, most important, it creates a certain academic and intellectual curiosity in one's mind so that you will continue to search and
Yes.
to look for more and deeper answers into topics that you're interested in or topics that you need to know more. That's vitally important. Education does not stop when you walk out of the classroom. And that's one of the most important things that I have mastered, that I've learned. And that was what I was given when I came to the United States, when I went to a community college, which many people dismiss as, this is where you go if you fail. Yes, but it's also a way to catch up and a way to for many others to have other conditions that this is a better fit for them at that time.
Thank you so much for sharing that experience. Because I've also met students, like a lot of them from SMC that have transferred into UCLA, and sometimes I find them like even more motivated, and like some of like I can learn a lot from them, like their drive as well, through like going through this whole process. So I was wondering if you have any like most memorable students or experiences or like professors at SMC or San Jose City College during your experience as being a president there? And were there any like challenges of the day-to-day of being a president? Because like being a leader is definitely not a very easy task.
Well, every job has their challenges, but I think what may be interesting to your listeners would be being a newcomer to community like in the US, where access to these leadership positions are maybe a little bit more difficult for various reasons. There are certainly difficulties and challenges, but some are more standard than others. The language, the culture, the different values, the rules of interaction that we all have to master. It's not that you have to forget what you had before, but you have to know when to learn the new ones and when to apply them in different situations. Okay, so you develop this bicultural, bimodal, or multicultural, multimodal way of reaction, action, so that you can deal with a different situation. Of course, you have to deal with many of the less pleasant situations. The racism that's embedded in so much a part of the society, and the kind of latent resistance to something that is unfamiliar with them. Okay, it could be a person, it could be certain ideas. Those are all the things that one would have to deal with, right? As far as students, I have met many, many students, including students from Hong Kong, who were actually very good students, and I guess they had wanted to look for an alternative path, and they want to have a place where they can learn and they just not judge by what their parents think about as being successful. Okay. And that was important. I give these students a lot of credit because they have risen above what, or they have been able to resist the a very common phenomenon in Hong Kong as well in other Asian countries that the parents basically want their children to go to a very reputable university so that they can talk about that as something to be proud of, which they should, but going to a lesser university with lesser reputation does not mean that they're not learning. Okay, learning is individual, and you have to find the right fit. So a lot of students, I found a lot of students who was able to adjust and to transition because they're in a smaller environment, a little bit more friendly, and the class sizes are smaller, and they can get along better. So these are some of the advantages that some of the students have revealed to me. And they've gone on to web students. Some of our students have gone on to Stanford, Columbia. Many of them have gone on to Columbia, and as you know, in UCLA, you know, every year we send about 600 students to UCLA. So
Yeah, that's a
it's
lot.
you know, this is a well and well established path, and it's a successful path for the students who transfer in. And we know that from the record that we receive from the universities that our students who move on to the other university, Berkeley, UCLA, which are the two universities our students move to, they actually, their achievement in these universities are on par with the students that they accept. Yeah. So it's a different path. It may fit some of the students better. And for those who think that they would benefit from that, I think they should. But of course, for those who get accepted, you know, first off to UCLA, and you know you can handle it, then you should just take on the challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, I've also seen like some articles where you really care about the students who are doing work study at community colleges and also caring about their mental health. So I really appreciate that, and I was really touched when I, like saw the articles and you like during hard moments like shootings or other incidents, you were always there to support the students in the college.
Yes. Well, our college is a community, and when you treat it this way, all the individuals in that community can feel it, and they can also then extend the same embracement to the other students and to other members. And that's how we create a better society, better world, you know, for ourselves. And it starts with us. This is all little things that we do, but it's important because we have to practice it in order for things to become better. It's not somebody else's responsibility because we can do something to control the situation, to create a better environment, and that's important.
Yeah, definitely. And do you have like any personal values or philosophies that you abide by, whether it be like Chinese or Western values when it comes to like teaching or leading, especially like as an educator?
I don't have any dogma that I
Yeah.
follow. I chose education and work, service work, because
Yeah.
I find it to my liking. This is my personal preference. Okay. But I think it's important because it allowed me to practice what I like. And because of that, it doesn't feel like it's difficult work because there's difficult moments.
Yeah.
But you know, in order to sustain the interest, in order to sustain the vigor of doing your work well and with energy, we cannot just look at it as a job. If it's just a job, pretty soon it'll be, you know, the interest will wear out, and one would come to loathe one's daily tasks. But you know, I'm fortunate. I'm something that I like to do and I enjoy doing, and I see the results. I see young people like you, or similar to you, who've gone on to great things, and in some we help to turn around their life because they came from circumstances that are unbelievably difficult, and so I feel very fulfilled in doing what I do, and so you know I if there's a certain belief that I think everybody in whatever you choose to do can leave some good behind and make this a better place for all. You know, this is a community that we create, and we can make it what we want it to be.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming today as well. It's like, even though I haven't met you before, but I can feel that you have a very warm and humble heart to help students and young people like us. And yeah, like in your career, have you like experienced anything that you felt like were misunderstandings or where you felt it was very difficult? And during these times, like, how do you motivate yourself to continue? Because one of my favorite movies is Oppenheimer, and like when Oppenheimer was trying to do like a big thing or like an invention, it took a lot of time to negotiate with people. So how do you deal with these difficult situations, and what advice would you give for us in terms of like communicating with people? Because we have to go into the workplace in the
Yeah,
future.
I think that's a very good point. You raise it as a very central point to, I think, one person's maturity. Really getting things done is not just knowing how, it's more than that. It's to get it done. Means you may try it and you can just say this is, the reasons that will cause it not to be successful. But then, if you want to get it done, you have to overcome those reasons, okay, those obstacles, and you have to find ways to do it. And that's what's important about completing a project. Okay, that's why in education, completing a project is a way of training someone in the early stages. Okay, not just knowing something, but you have to be able to do something with it and complete it. Okay, and it's the same thing in life. So that's, we talk about how doing something that we believe in, we enjoy, makes it so much more meaningful, okay, and fulfilling. And so circling back to that is that when I come to certain situations when it's difficult, it's easier to motivate oneself to know that what you're doing is not just for your own personal benefits. You're doing something good, you're doing something right, and it will benefit other people. And it's not a personal, if you have a setback, it's not personal. It's not a personal defeat. And it's, you just have to try again. And nobody is, you're winning not for yourself, you're winning for a bigger cause. So that these are very strong motivating factors to keep going. So we, of course, in our career, we run into difficult situations, but we have to step back and think about, okay, why are we doing what we're doing? And why are the people who are opposing us or putting up obstacles do like they're doing? Is there any way to convince them that they may be looking at it wrong? They may be able to look at it in other ways to see the great benefits of what a different way of doing things can be. A change would be good. So those are all helpful to me in these situations.
That's great advice. Yeah, thank you so much. 'Cause you've met so many people from like a lot of different backgrounds, and like communicating with so many people must take a lot of time and effort as well. So
Yeah.
now after retirement, what do you think are your plans, or do you like doing traveling to different parts of the world? Like, do you have any dreams or stuff that you still want to achieve, or just spend more time with your family?
Yeah. I think all of those, you of course, there are things that you want to do, but one of the most interesting things that I look back on, I always know what I needed to do tomorrow, okay, in my life. Retirement is actually a very daring adventure because you don't know what you can do tomorrow. And all, it's the unknown, totally unknown territory. So you retired and you go into totally unknown territory. That's actually very novel for me. Yeah, so I have to learn to say, oh, okay, this is, I can direct all my time and effort in doing things that only I want to do. It's not directed by somebody. So that was very novel for me. And I discovered there are a whole lot of things that I like to do, including traveling, including spending time with meaningful people like you, where I can do what I feel like I should be doing. Now spend time talking to you and get to know the person, and not just a superficial interaction, transactional. These are things that I like to do before that I didn't have time to do because my time was so limited. I don't have time to talk to the students. I may have, 2, 3 minutes chatting with the students when I come across them. Among, 20, 30,000 students, I get to talk to maybe a couple hundred a year, right? That's and at a very superficial level. But now I get to, I want to. I talk to someone in more depth. It's more meaningful. It's not just superficial interactions. And that's what I like to do. There are friends that I've not seen that I wanted to spend more time with them and really get to know them and learn about the situation. Those are the precious little things that require time that I didn't have time to do. So they were very, very, meaningful to me. So I like to read, I like to listen to music, and so these allow me to do some of these, and also have little projects that I find interesting that I work on, and to share my experiences and to also to learn new things too. So all these are very, I would say, luxurious experiences, for me.
Yeah, I feel like life is all about experiencing and like you learning, sharing, and also working on different things is so it is like very admirable to me as and
So
you're
I would say that, your generation, I think we may be driven by parents or society because from a lack of resources, lack of wealth, that gaining material wealth became the priority in life. I think in your generation, where you live in a situation where livelihood is much more stable. You have a little bit more option in doing what you want to do. So you choose what you like to do because you don't have to spend 100% of your time, 120% of the time to try to make ends meet anymore. So you get to do what you can do what you can enjoy some of the luxuries of doing some of the things that you like to do. And that's important, the spiritual wealth that we can enjoy. It's just not the material. It's not just the material gain.
Yeah, definitely. I think there are so many like non-material happiness that we can gain from other things, like not just career related, but also relating to our personal interests.
Yes, happiness is not a priority, and I think in most people's upbringing, they don't talk about that. Somehow in our culture, that's not seems like it's not so important, and we equate having material wealth as that's happiness. But I think that's some difference. I think it's we need to move that up to high position, because without that happiness, everything else wouldn't be that enjoyable.
Yeah, definitely. Throughout your career, do you think there were like any mentors or teachers that particularly inspired you or like guided you throughout your journey?
Yeah, I think there are people who have, I've of course, along my career, along my life, a lot of people have helped me in different ways. But I think one of the most inspiring experience I had was when I was a student at community college. I had a language faculty member teacher. I was taking French, and he was a French gentleman teaching that course. He's been teaching for a long time. Very engaging, faculty member. He made the language come alive, and I enjoyed his
Wow.
course. But also because at that age, I was easily distracted by other interests. Okay.
Yeah.
And there were times that I wasn't well prepared for my classes. So he one day I had a conversation with him, a very simple conversation, and he told me to come to his office during lunch hour, and he was eating his cheese and apple in a very typical French way, and he told me to eat my lunch so that we can have a friendly chat, and so I did, and he says that when he introduced himself, that he grew up in Shanghai. Of
Oh,
French descent, yeah.
wow.
And he said he understand a bit about Chinese culture. He said, well, young people in China live a life that's very restricted and disciplined by their family, by other people. I think it still is today, and also by the authority in many ways. There are things that you cannot do. Okay. He said, well, now you're in the US, it's a different society, and you decide what you want to become. You have to provide a discipline for yourself. Okay, so you want to be a student, that's really what you want to do, then you need to help discipline yourself to become a student, do what a student needs to do. And a faculty member, the teacher is not going to tell you what to do. Okay, when you're not turning your homework on time, when you're not doing well in your tests, you just get the results, and that's it. It's up to you. Yeah, and your maturity is to be able to control yourself and set priorities for yourself. So that was one of the most enlightening conversations I had. Yes.
I feel like the fact that you remember it so vividly means it really, have a lasting impression on you.
Oh yes, it had definitely had an impression on me. As I know that I have to own up to my own failure or my own success because, I make it what I'm going to be. Yes.
Like you're the captain of your own fate.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You're the pilot, and you can fly it in the way you want it to, and you can fly the plane directly to the ground, or you can take yourself to the destination.
So if you look back and you had like something you could share with your, like 18-year-old, 19-year-old self, would that be the same kind of advice you would give? Like not knowing what you will encounter in the future 10 or 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I think for an 18-year-old, it's very hard to, maybe they won't understand this, but I think for an 18-year-old, it's easier to understand something a little simpler that define, what is the most important thing in your life. It's like a lot of young people in their 18-year-olds is that they have so many things they want to do. They really don't know when they have time to do all of that stuff, and then end up not having anything done at the end of the day. Okay, they haven't done the homework, they haven't done the reading, they haven't called a mom, they don't they didn't clean up the room and all those little things, right? So and ask we can ask them 18-year-old typically, what you've done. They say, well, I don't know, I was doing things, yeah. So one of the things I advise people is that just to set a time schedule for yourself. So you're students, right? And your main thing is really to come here, and you spend a lot of effort and money to get to university, so you study, right? So and doesn't mean that you have to do it 24 hours a day. You take five courses, you have classes maybe 5 days, and two lessons a week for each of the courses. So you set aside 3 hours of study for each class you have taken, and then at each day you set aside maybe 4 hours of studying. The rest of the time yours, right? You just set aside the 4 hours. I think most students, as from my experience, if you study 4 hours a day, really study 4 hours a day, you should have no problem. But imagine, you've gone to classes maybe 3 hours and you study for 4 hours, and how many hours do you have for the rest of the day?
Around 5 hours left, like, or
Yeah,
like seven,
more. Yeah,
six,
six,
seven.
yeah, maybe
Yeah.
6 hours. Young people don't need any sleep anyway. So you have 6, 7 hours, and imagine what you can do for 6, 7 hours. You can play your games online. You can go exercise. You can eat your lunch. You can talk on the phone with your girlfriend, boyfriend, or whoever, parents. So you just have to set aside those 4 hours a day. You finish those 4 hours, the rest of the day is it's
It's
free.
yours.
And so just try to do that. If you can
Yeah.
do that, then or you try to, shoot towards that. You may not be able to do that at the first try. You keep working on it. The first semester, first week may be hard. The second week a little easier. If you keep to that schedule, you'll spend 2 hours before dinner, you study, 2 hours after dinner, you study, pretty soon, however, set it to your own liking. You will be able to find that you have plenty of time. Once that's a routine, the rest makes this a lot easier. A lot easier.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I feel like that's very meaningful, to us, because it's like we always have our schedules on Google calendars, and sometimes it's like, oh, you see that blank, so you just like add some free time for yourself too. And
Right.
time
You always
management.
said you never schedule a study time in your Google calendar. That
Yeah.
becomes something you do when you have when you get free time, right? When you don't
Yeah.
have to do other things. So reprioritize that. Put your study time in there first, and then you put your other activities around these important activities that you've dedicated your life to at this point. That is going to school and try to study. Then you can do your other interests, pursue other interests at the other times.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think Lawrence might have some questions because he's also wanting to like go into academia as like a biology undergrad. So he might have some questions. Let me see. Okay.
Hi, good afternoon, Professor Daniel
Hi.
Mundy, and greetings from Cambridge. It's actually quite late at night in the UK, but I'm so glad to be able to join this lovely talk and hear from someone with actually rich experience leading higher education institutions. I'd like to ask something about like the challenges faced by higher education. I'm aware of some budget cuts and that some institutions have started to adopt sort of like a more contract-based system for hiring lecturers. So I've heard people say like maybe they're just gonna like teach a course for a few months and then part ways with the university and then they're gonna look for the next contract. Do you think this is like a prevalent like situation, or is it just like a short-term measure under like these circumstances? And I guess as aspiring academics, how can we perhaps prepare ourselves for what lies ahead?
Yeah. Actually, the situation you describe is nothing new. It's been in
Same.
existence for as long as I know. Okay. So when I graduated, when I finished my PhD in linguistics at that time, the entire country has three openings. Okay. In
Wow.
whole in the entire United States at that time, and three positions, tenure track positions. So, and there were like about 200 to 300 graduates. So we competed for those 2, 3 positions, and the lucky ones would get one of these positions. So to say that does not mean that you should be discouraged from pursuing a career in academia, because there are two things that's happening right now. One is there's a massive replacement of existing faculty members who are coming to the age of retirement. I know in the US, there is a wave of development of expansion in universities. And most of the expansion have cost at the baby boomers' time. And this population is coming to the age where they're retiring. So many of these positions will be replaced. Okay. And the other part is that there are other universities in other parts of the world that are being built in the developing countries and in countries where the economy is being developed, and they are developing the higher education. So there are a need for faculty members there. Of course, now these are not the well-established big name universities like Stanford, UCLA, Cambridge, or Harvard. But these, nevertheless, are meaningful positions. If you're into research, you want to look for the R1 universities, and there are these in different places around the world. Even in Hong Kong, the universities are rising in ranking, and research is being set as priority in many of them, and they have become very reputable universities in comparison to others in the world. And of course, in the relationship between Hong Kong and China, in China, the higher education is expanding even faster. So if one likes the environment and the teaching situation over there, there is another avenue. And of course, don't underestimate yourself. You may be one of those with the kind of research and the kind of ability in teaching that institutions, established ones, they're hiring one or two faculty members, want to look at you and recruit you to be among them. And also, it's not always the first position that defines you. Okay. Sometimes it takes one or two positions before you find the right institution that you want to stay with. So, if that's what you like to do, just keep doing what you like to do.
Right, I see. It's very promising to hear that, like there are some new opportunities as well. I do have massive respect for your determination in stepping into the academia. And I'm sure like you must have been really passionate about linguistics and social sciences. I do hope that I have the same determination as I pursue my research career. So thanks a lot.
Well, I think the important point to know that is throughout your study, you will change. Okay. What you determine you like to do after you learn more, after you have been exposed to other areas, you may want to pursue other interests as well. And that is okay. Okay. I did not go to, first year or second year in college thinking that I will become a college president. Okay, far from it. Okay, it came out, during my career development after I tried different things that, teaching and administration and other work research, and I finally settled on this because, I find it's a good fit for me. So you may find the same thing with you. You may find that teaching and doing research is not the only thing you like to do. You may want to again, to the other aspects of biology or biology in combination with other academic areas. So let yourself, explore the possibilities.
Right, yeah, I see. I guess it's important to stay open to different things and opportunities as well. So, yeah, I'll keep that in mind. Yeah.
Whatever you do, you can explore, but do it well. Okay, it's important. There are people who spend a lot of time wasting their time because they do everything a little bit. Okay, but whatever you do, just make sure you do it well.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Zhang. That was very inspiring as well to me. Do you have any like last few words for our audience that you'd like to share, like the young people in general?
I think I look at you and I talk to Lawrence. I think you're a generation that's very fortunate. You have the opportunities to develop your potential. Make use of that. You're in what we call knowledge-rich environment. So take advantage of these great institutions. They're miracles. Because you're in a place where everybody is concerned about making you learn and providing you with the safest and most nurturing environment for learning. So take advantage of that. You can make mistakes. You can try different things. It's very forgiving. Don't pass up the opportunity, because once you get in society, it's not as forgiving, and you won't have that many opportunities later on in your in different life stages.
Yes, definitely. We'll keep that in mind. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Well,
And
you're welcome, and good luck to all of you.
yeah, hope all the best with your family and your travels and your projects that you're working on. It's so nice talking to you today. I really learned a lot. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll probably like edit the recording and then I'll let you know once I publish it on the website and onto our social media. And I'll
All
reach out.
right. Okay, well, and you can keep in contact with me. There's anything, questions or things I can help you with, let me know. Okay. All right.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming today. And also thank you to Dr. Chan. He was really kind to introduce
Did you interview him?
No,
Did you
because
get a
he said
chance?
he was busy at the time, but he was very kind. And if you ever see him, please help me say thanks to him. And thank you so much to you too.
Okay. All right. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Goodbye, take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.